Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today I am so excited to interview two guests who have become very instrumental in my own life and in the lives of so many others. I'm speaking of Dave Ramsey and his daughter, Rachel Cruz, and they've made it their mission to help families from all walks of life find hope through financial peace, and it's working. I know so many people that have found help for their finances through your organization, and I know I have. So Dave and Rachel, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having us.
We're honored to be with you, sir.
Yeah. My producer, Daniel, when I was interviewing him for the job, he had written a book and he was doing some things. And I said, you know, is the book paying your bills? Because I've written books and, you know, they're not paying my bills. I love doing it and I love people reading it, but it wasn't paying my bills. And he said, oh, no, not at all. And I said, well, how are you making a living right now? And he said, oh, my wife and I are big fans of Dave Ramsey, and he recommends saving up 6 months to a year of salary so that when you are out of a job, you don't get desperate for a job. He was 26 years old. I thought, oh, my goodness, at 26, I wasn't close to that. But my wife and I also started Financial Peace University, and then Lucy came along, and we couldn't finish it yet, but I learned so much in the short time I was there. But before we get into the book, I want to point out something that jumped out at me in chapter one, because I can totally relate. Rachel, you said it cracks you up when you hear people refer to your dad like he's Bono or Mother Teresa. And I laughed because people do that with my dad. But to you and to me, they're just dad.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's exactly right. Yeah. I was always, especially as a little kid, you know, when his radio show started kind of taking off and people started recognizing his voice in restaurants and they turn around and say something to him, you know.
Yep.
And so it was always like this idea, you know, growing up of like, this is so crazy. Like, what does dad really do? You know, these people really are so excited to talk to him. And the older I've gotten, and probably you're the same way as well, I'm like, gosh, dad has been delivering hope to these people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For year after year, and they've literally had their lives changed. Their marriages have been saved because of God's ways of handling money, but using dad obviously as the vehicle, and him explaining all of this to America. And so now I look at it, I'm like, it's so cool to see how many people really have been helped through this message. But yeah, the star factor of, you know, fame or whatever you would call it, you know, it's kind of an illusion.
Oh yeah. Well, especially because the kids don't know that you're famous, you know, they're just like, well, you're dad. So, well, that's about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right.
Well, let's jump in.
Your kids know you're famous. You're not much of a dad.
Yeah. Oh, my good dad. Yeah, that's true. That's a great point. Well, the book we're going to talk about is called Smart Money, Smart Kids. It comes out today, and I recommend all of our listeners pick up a copy. So walk me through this. You both sat down together to write what I think is just an amazingly practical guide in helping parents teach their kids how to be smart with money. But what inspired this? I mean, Dave, you've got a lot of books out there on money. Why is this one so important?
It's, in a sense, it's a book people have been asking for since I wrote the first book.
Mm.
People have always said to Rachel when she speaks all over America, or to me for the last quarter of a century everywhere you go, why don't they teach this stuff in schools? And why didn't you teach me this stuff 20 years ago? And where were you when I was a kid? And why don't we teach our kids this stuff? And then we got to thinking as we've started doing a whole series of things in the legacy space and thinking about generational, well, you really got to start that when they're four.
Yeah.
And you know, we really did. And so it's every parent's dream that their kid is their do-over.
Oh, wow. That's a great point. It's true, because we all want great things for our kids. Rachel, you co-authored this book with your dad, and you've spent the last several years speaking to tens of thousands of teenagers and college students and parents on this topic. Why are you so passionate about seeing the next generation win with money?
Well, I think it kind of comes out of my story. You know, growing up as Dave Ramsey's daughter, obviously I learned how to handle money from a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being off at college and just kind of hit me one day of, gosh, there's just such a lack of knowledge when it comes to this subject within my generation. They just don't know how to handle their money. They have no clue where to start. And I thought, well, mom and dad taught us. And then I started seeing it as a gift that they've laid this foundation. Mm. So now as an adult, I can go out and win. And not because I'm Dave Ramsey's daughter, but because God's ways of handling money work. And so I thought, well, what if every kid in America grew up in a house like I grew up in the sense where money, you know, it wasn't an obsessive topic, but they were intentional with teaching us things throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the years of understanding how money works. So
yeah.
That was really my heart behind it, is to give parents the tools that they can go now teach their kids. And it's exciting to think, because I'm like, I hope, you know, thousands of people read this book and parents read this book, because there could be a whole new generation rising up who understands how to handle money.
Yeah, and we need it. I mean, if every kid grew up learning this stuff, our government and our country wouldn't be trillions and trillions of dollars in debt, which, I mean, really, it's the next generation paying it off. So when you teach kids this stuff now, they look at it and they go, hey, wait a minute, I don't want to pay for all that debt. We might start voting some people in that actually know what they're doing. And to that point, Dave, you say common sense isn't common anymore. What do you mean by that?
I think Benjamin Franklin said it, so I guess it's always been the case. There's mm-hmm. nothing more uncommon than common sense. And, you know, growing up in Tennessee, we always had these sayings, but I remember my dad saying, you know, that guy's got good horse sense.
Yeah.
And we didn't have horses, so I didn't know what he meant. but, you know, these country sayings, these redneck sayings that I grew up with, and I'm redneck, so I like them. But, you know, the idea, he's got good horse sense. And all that means is he's got good common sense. He has the ability to navigate through life with minimal damage.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. And we need help in that area. Rachel, you say that some people argue that not teaching your kids to manage debt puts them at a disadvantage. Can you explain that for our listeners a little more?
Sure. Well, teaching your kids to live debt-free, I believe, is the ultimate freedom when it comes to finances. Because as I've been, you know, studying the subject, and I've never been in debt myself, but mom and dad's story, they filed bankruptcy because they took on too much debt. And just, you know, talking to college students who've taken on student loans, I've come to this realization that, you know, debt is a thief. Debt steals not only your money from you, but your choices, your options. And so when you have debt, I believe it limits you. And so this generation coming up is the most indebted generation in history. Everything from student loans now passing $1 trillion to the fact that, you know, our generation believes you have to have a credit card to survive, or you're an adult once you get a credit card, and you can never drive a nice car unless you get a car loan. And all of these decisions, all of these choices may not seem huge in the moment of, oh, I'll just get a car loan, it's not that big of a deal. But when that $400 car payment comes once a month and it steals part of your paycheck, you're limiting your options of what you can do with your money and what you can do with your life. And so growing up in a house, we're learning to avoid debt completely by learning to live within my means, working hard, saving, budgeting, being responsible. I get to avoid this pitfall that so many people have fallen into. And so that's my heart for parents, is to show your kids that way of living, to live debt-free.
Yeah, and it's very unique. And it's true, you grew up in a very unique family, and so you've got this new perspective that a lot of kids didn't grow up with. In the book, you talk about going to a restaurant called Sharon's Kitchen. What stuck out to you about that?
Yeah, well, Sharon's Kitchen was meant, a.k.a. you're going back to the Ramsey house for lunch. Mom cooked. This was, yeah, her restaurant, if you will. And yeah, growing up, I was born the year mom and dad filed for bankruptcy. Mm. And so I was born in April, and they filed in September. So those first years, you know, 6-7 years of my life was them really digging themselves out of this hole, trying to figure out how money works. And so as a little kid, I mean, you know, kindergarten, first grade, watching them make these sacrifices in life. And I just remember, and I'm sure all kids in America feel this way, you know, when they go to church, you leave church, everyone's going out to lunch. And we would beg mom and dad all the time, can we please just go out to lunch somewhere? Can we please go out to lunch? And, you know, dad would be like, we're going to go to the best restaurant in town. Mm. And we would be like, okay, let's go. What is it going to be? And, you know, he dropped the bomb that we're going back to Sharon's Kitchen. And so that just kind of just shows, it's a funny story in the sense of, I'm sure people can relate, but it just shows the sacrifice that they made. They probably wanted to go out to eat with their friends. They wanted to go hang out, but they didn't have the money. It wasn't in the budget. And so they told themselves no, which ultimately meant no to us as well. And so looking back, I'm like, what a great example they've shown to us that they really did live out what they believe.
Yeah, they really have. And obviously, it stuck, which is the important thing. One of the things I noticed in the book is that it seems to be re-educating people on the foundations of being smart with money. So you both take a lot of time to go back through and get everyone on the same page when you talk about topics like work and spending and giving. So let's dive into this section. Dave, talk to us about work. The subtitle of the section is, it's not a four-letter word. What do you mean by that? Why is it so important to teach your kids the value of working hard? I mean, if you've got a lot, why not just give it to your kids? Why do they have to work for it?
Well, the Bible's real clear that one of the things that working gives us is dignity. When we work and we accomplish something, even something as simple as, okay, I cut the grass. I mean, there's not a guy or gal on the planet that cut the grass and didn't stand back in the street for just a second and admire your work.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you got to do it again next week. And you're hot and sweaty and tired. You know, it's not really a pleasant task necessarily, but there's still that pride.
Yeah.
You finish the job. And so work gives you that sense of dignity, that sense of traction in your personal life. And to not give that gift to your children, I think that's child abuse.
Yeah.
I think, you know, teaching a child they don't have to work, now you're raising an entitled, arrogant brat. And not only are they going to have a hard life ahead of them, because nobody wants to hang out with people that don't carry their portion of the water, mm-hmm. but you also stole their dignity from them.
Yeah.
And from a practical standpoint, work is where money comes from. And it's a parent's job to teach their kids where babies come from and where money comes from.
Yeah. I talk to my son about that regularly because he goes, Dad, you have to go to work today. And I say, I do. And he goes, I wish you didn't have to go to work. And I say, I do too, but the reason we have this house and you've got your bike and things like that is because Daddy goes to work. Hearing your story reminds me, I did a charity team that we did bicycle rides around the country. Over a weekend, we'd ride 250 miles. And in the beginning, I talked to the group because they were raising funds for ministries and through these rides. And I say, you know, we could have picked a course in your state that'd be downhill the whole way. And you'd have great conversations. We'd coast the whole way and you'd see pretty scenery, but there'd be no sense of accomplishment at the end of this. This is going to be a really hard thing. 250 miles over 3 days is a lot of riding. You're going to be really sore. But when you look back on this, you're going to have accomplished something great and you'll be proud of it. And that's what you're doing with kids, isn't it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. They're getting that sense of traction, that sense of dignity. I mean, what little four-year-old, when they pick up their room, even though Mom and Dad probably picked up 28 toys and they picked up three, doesn't stick their little chest out and you give them a gold star and say, you're the world's best room cleaner. You're beginning to build self-esteem. You're beginning to build dignity in them. And this sense of traction, this sense of I can impact the variables around me for my benefit and for the benefit of others.
Sure.
And so that's what work does.
Yeah, it really does. Rachel, what were some of the methods your dad taught you about working hard, and how has this been a benefit to you as an adult?
Sure. Well, on the tactical standpoint, obviously, you know, they made us work, but it was age appropriate. You know, mm-hmm. 4-year-old, when they clean the room, it looks a lot different than when a 14-year-old does. And so working outside the home and all of that. So they instilled all of that. And so, you know, even little things like we were never given an allowance as kids. We were always on commission. So that's where our money came from, was to work. So you work, you get paid. You don't work, you don't get paid. And so we, you know, would have payday nights, you know, once a week, and we'd look at the chores we did that week, and they would pay us a dollar for each chore and all of that. So there was kind of that tactical element. But now as an adult, I look back on those times, and I will say too, you know, parents are probably hearing that and thinking, oh, what glorious children to have that would work and not complain. But no, I assure you, I'm sure we complained. I'm sure we did not enjoy working all of the time. But Mom and Dad, it was kind of a requirement. And I'm glad they forced that on us, because now as an adult, I'm not scared of hard work. I mean, yeah. You know, this past weekend, you know, even just working weekends and doing events and that kind of thing, you know, working 18-hour days, that's just what you do. You work hard to accomplish something. And so that was instilled very early in us.
Yeah, it's a great thing to instill in your children. Dave, how should parents handle this in teaching their kids the value of working hard? And what should they not do about teaching their kids a good work ethic?
Well, we don't want to underdo it, and we don't want to overdo it. Mm. If you overdo it, you know, you're sending them to the salt mines, and you're just trying to make a point that has something to do more with your psychological shortcomings. To underdo it, they graduate from high school, and their only skill set is playing the Wii and eating Doritos. I mean, and you know, you've done your child a real disservice if you do that. So, you know, again, work, the way I look at these financial principles, these basic principles in your life is, it's much like, you know, you're going to make your kids study so they get good grades, mm-hmm. but we're not going to make them stay in their room 17 hours for the rest of their life just so they get an A+ instead of an A-.
Yeah.
If you're a reasonable parent, mm-hmm. anyway. And I'm going to make my children brush their teeth and bathe. But we're not going to, you know, brush our teeth until they bleed. You know, this is it, people go nuts on stuff.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, you need to learn hygiene and, you know, but there is there's, you know, wonderful godlike thing where you're trying to stay between justice and mercy.
Yeah, definitely. And Rachel, you mentioned something I thought was important, that parents can go too far with this, and you don't want kids to grow up thinking that they're going to get paid for everything they do around the house. Talk a little bit about this. You know, it's every single thing I do, I'm going to get paid for. Sometimes it's just because you're part of a family.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So yeah, I suggest parents, you know, you have chores that your kids can do that they can earn money from, but there's also going to be things around the house that they do, again, just because they're part of the family. And so, you know, for us, for instance, growing up in the Ramsey house, the kitchen was always a place where we never got paid to set the table. We didn't get paid to do dishes. That was something we just did to show love to our mom and thankfulness of, okay, you know, we're going to help you here in the kitchen. And that's just part of what you do. And so that just, I mean, you know, that instills just the idea of being a good citizen, if you will. You go and serve places, you go and help out at your church, you go help out around your community, and you're going to get paid for those things, but you do it in the sense of accomplishing something and helping other people out.
Yeah, Dave, before we go on to some more topics, talk about grace for your children. What do you mean, and why is it so important in regard to teaching kids about work?
Well, again, we want to keep them where they don't have this mentality that every time the word comes up, it's a problem. And, you know, one of the things we taught our kids, and one of the best gifts my parents gave me, was that work can be enjoyable if it's in your passion and in your gift area. Train up a child in the way he is bent, the old King James says. And you know, and so I was very entrepreneurial as a little kid. I was a nerd entrepreneur. And so my parents just encouraged me to have all these little businesses all the time. Everything from making leather bracelets that you stamp their little names on and selling them at the locker, right? And I got in trouble for doing too much business at the locker. And, you know, all the way, you know, to cutting grass. And I had a little P&L, a little profit and loss statement on my little cutting grass business when I was 12 years old. And, you know, so I was a little nerd entrepreneur, and they just leaned into that. My sister, on the other hand, was more artistic. And so they leaned in and taught her to do her art and those kinds of things. And so, you know, work is a form, for those of us that are believers, it's a form of worship. The Jewish people actually say the work is, the actual Hebrew word is very akin to worship, to worship. And so, you know, we have worship service on Sunday morning, and we have customer service on Monday morning. Both are an act of service.
Yeah, that's right. I remember when I was little, I used to take the clippings from our Christmas tree and try to make wreaths out of it and go sell them. And I look back and I can't believe people had to have bought them out of pity or maybe cuteness. I'm not quite
cuteness.
Sure.
It's just adorable.
You know, I'm 6 or 7 years old with, you know, Elmer's glue all over pine needles.
And you know why I would buy that if you came to the door and you're that old? Is to encourage that kid's spirit. I don't, you know, the idea that you get to go do that, and then someday you're not sitting on your tail looking at the rest of us to pay for your life.
Yeah, that's right. It's true. Let's talk about spending. Dave, I can't believe I have to ask this, but so many people don't get this very important aspect about money. What do you mean by when it's gone in relation to spending?
You're right. We all think that money is not finite, because it's not, in the sense of I can borrow my way into oblivion. To where I can't breathe. I can borrow myself into bankruptcy. That just because someone will loan you money doesn't mean that you have the ability to pay it back. They will loan a dog money. And so you've really got to develop this simple idea that money is finite. When it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
And you need to teach that in your child, because that gives them some basic math skills of when it's gone, it's gone. But it also gives them this neat experience of the marketplace, the world, their cash position told them no.
Yeah.
And we all need to be able to hear no. Because sometimes when you pray and ask God for something, the answer is no.
Right, right. Rachel, how did your dad teach you about spending? You know, do you remember lessons that you learned growing up about that spending and money is finite?
Sure. Well, one of the best things they did is, you know, talking back to the work section, you know, that we got paid on different chores we did. And so part of us making money is we got to spend our own money on things we wanted. And so that was just a good emotion to walk through of this, you know, being 7 years old and doing chores for 2 weeks. And then I take an envelope that says spend on it, and I get to go buy something. And going through the emotion of, okay, when I spend my own money, I take care of my item much more. And I look for different options. And so, you know, when we were shopping for toys, yeah, mom and dad would, you know, compare prices with us. We didn't have the internet back then. So, you know, it would be maybe let's go to 2 or 3 different stores and look at that same toy. And maybe you're going to find one cheaper, you know, or even quality. I mean, I heard a couple of times, you know, mom and dad saying, well, hey, well, if you just save up another week, you can get this better toy that's going to last a lot longer. So just kind of having those conversations, which sounds so simple, but I think that's where parents miss some of this money conversation, is they miss these teachable moments. And so, and kids are wired just like adults, that naturally you're either a saver or a spender. anyone's like that. And so I was actually a spender, and I still am. I'm a natural spender.
Me too.
So, yes, good. Yeah. So as a kid, I mean, I was always the kid that was spending on bubble gum or like a cheap Slinky or something crazy. I just wanted to spend money if I had it. And so the great thing, I look back on my childhood, and they didn't force me into this little mold of what you would think Dave Ramsey's kids would be like, you know, like probably little money robots, because that wasn't me. And so they didn't force me into making me, you know, save everything I made, because that's not part of who I am. And so allowing me, I think as spenders probably make more money mistakes than savers because we're so impulsive. But that was another thing, is they let me make mistakes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did that. And that's one thing for parents, is to let your kids experience, you know, the hardship of picking the wrong toy or spending their money on something that probably they shouldn't have spent their money on, you know, obviously morally okay, but letting them experience that downfall, because you want them to make inexpensive mistakes while they're under your roof. Mm-hmm. So when they go off on their own, they don't have to make huge expensive mistakes when they're out on their own.
Yeah, that's such an important one. Dave, you actually say this in the book. I'm going to read the line. It says, it takes tremendous strength and resolve to allow your kids to suffer the consequences of their decisions. Can you expand on that a little bit?
You know, the biggest problem with it is they're all a bunch of drama queens, these little savages.
Hey, we were not.
Yes, you were.
Maybe,
you were the worst. And so, you know, they're going to, when the money's gone, I mean, they can make a case that they're going to end up in intensive care if you don't buy this for them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the most persuasive salespeople on the planet. And so it does take strength and resolve to stay calm and just be kind and kind of smile and just go, you know, you're going to live through this and you're not going to get any more. You've spent all your money on this and you made a bad decision and we let you do it anyway. And I want them to feel the pinch of that. So as Rachel said, when they're 46, they're still not doing the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Richie, you were talking about how you take care of toys better when it's the money you earned and you're spending it on. The principle that I've learned with that one, I say, nothing corners like a rental.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
You know, that's why you never want to buy a used rental car, because you absolutely know it's not, you know, if it's not my car, I'm not taking care of it. I'm spilling stuff and I'm, you know, cramming on the brakes and hitting the gas. It's not mine. It's no big deal. But when it's yours, I think that's sometimes parents make that mistake when they just give their kids cars. They're not earning it. They're not having to save up, you know. I've got a friend now, and his kid knows in a few years he's going to want a car, and his parents aren't going to pay for it. And I guarantee you, as he saves up for 3 or 4 years in a row, he's going to be taking care of that vehicle.
Yes. Yeah. And that's one of the big stories in the book I talk about when it comes to saving money. Mm-hmm. Is that's what mom and dad did. They actually matched whatever money we saved. Mm-hmm. So they would match that. Dad would call it his 401 Dave plan.
Yeah. That's a good one, though. You know, matching that is a good thing, too, because it does. Dave, it's just like you said, you'd buy that wreath, you know, that I was making. It's encouraging your kids in the right behavior. Hey, I've done that with Lincoln. He, for some reason, wants a rock tumbler. He wants to polish rocks. And I said, if you save up half, I'll pay the other half.
Mm.
And, you know, now we're kind of in it together because we're both doing that with each other. And then, you know, he's going to have something that he wants to play with.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a big ticket item like a car, you know, some parents aren't financially able to match. And that's okay. Your kid can drive, you know, a $500 car. They're out there and they're okay. They're going to survive. But if you are able to match, yeah, it just instills, I think, the reward aspect as well for saving for a long period of time, making sacrifices and making a big purchase.
Yeah, well, let's talk about saving. Dave, as you put it, saving changes behavior. Explain that to our listeners.
Children do what feels good. Adults devise a plan and follow it.
Mm.
One definition of maturity is learning to delay pleasure. And so what you're teaching your child when you teach them to save is the delaying of pleasure. And so it you know, it melds right into the abstinence discussion. We're going to give up sex before marriage. Not good morally. We're going to give that up so that we have the best later.
Yeah.
And we're going to give up the possibility of buying something today that's kind of okay. And in return, we can save systematically and buy the best later.
Sure.
So you're taking muscles in your child, and you're building their maturity muscle when you teach them to save.
Mm-hmm.
Saving is not about saving. Saving is about character.
Oh, Dave, that is a good point. And I would love to talk more about some of this stuff in more detail, but it's going to have to wait until next time because we are totally out of time for today. The book we've been talking about is titled Smart Money, Smart Kids, and it comes out today, and I highly encourage every parent to pick up a copy. This book is very practical, and it offers parents so much advice on teaching your kids how to be smart with money. You can get a copy of the book and find out more information about Dave Ramsey and Rachel Cruz by calling us at 877-732-6825. You can also visit our website at drjamesdobson.org and click on today's broadcast. And to all of our listeners out there, make sure to join us tomorrow. I'm going to ask Dave and Rachel about one of the best sections of this book, where they write about how to teach kids contentment. You don't want to miss that. Thanks for joining us today, and we hope to see you back next time for the conclusion of Smart Money, Smart Kids, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ryan Dobson, and all this month we're giving you the chance to pre-order Godless, the conclusion to the best-selling fiction trilogy by Dr. Dobson and Kurt Bruner. For a suggested donation of $25 or more, we'll send you this highly anticipated follow-up where God's image on earth is exchanged for the horrors of a godless world. For a suggested donation of $75 or more, we'll send you the entire trilogy, including Fatherless, Childless, and Godless. So call Family Talk today at 877-732-6825 or visit our website at drjamesdobson.org.